The ups and downs of the climate of planet Earth have been pretty well documented over the past century, with accurate records kept of variations in temperature and pressure, drought and flood. But what about the climate in the centuries before the science of meteorology was established? Many early scholars and scientists studied the weather, and some kept records, but at best, this only offers us a patchy snapshot of the climate in times past. Scientists today are gradually peeling away the centuries with increasingly complex methods, enabling us to peek into the past and reveal many of the variations that have occurred in the planet's climate. I'm Adam Walton, and today in the Science Cafe, we'll hear about research by scientists in Wales, which is helping to uncover the secrets of our ancient climate. I've come along to Bangor University's School of Ocean Sciences at Menai Bridge to hear how studying some very long-lived sea creatures is beginning to paint a picture of climate change over the past 1,000 years. Dr. Paul Butler is research lecturer, and recently Paul and the team here at the School of Ocean Sciences published the results of some research carried out on the shells of Icelandic clams. Paul's with me now. We're sat outside the School of Ocean Sciences, Paul, on a beautiful day, it has to be said. Well, what prompted or sparked your interest in, well, clams, but you know, particularly bivalves and shelled creatures?
Interesting point, really, because it goes back into why I'm here at all. You know, I originally was not a scientist at all. I was working in computers in London, and I came up here to do an undergraduate course in ocean sciences, and then a PhD came up looking at these clams, essentially around the Isle of Man in the Irish Sea. Mm. And I thought, well, when you're looking at the marine climate, there's not so much information about it on this very high resolution level that we get from these clams. And I thought, well, this could be new science. This could be something where I can actually contribute something to science. And so I did this PhD and was very successful. And using the methods which we'll probably discuss later, I was able to make what we call a chronology going back 500 years.
And do you mind me asking when this was?
This was in 2004 that I started the PhD.
So I would imagine that at that point there was a connection in your mind between that and climate change, or at least you're studying it for those particular reasons.
Yes.
And was it because there was a particular interest and climate change at that point had obviously attained a certain prominence?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It's a major issue that's going to affect human society over the next decades. Mm. And one aspect that was kind of missing from research at the time was what was going on in the marine climate. We had quite a lot of information about the terrestrial climate over the last 1,000 years, mainly gleaned through tree rings and other high-resolution proxies, but nothing about what was going on in the oceans. And we could see from these clams, which are essentially like an oceanic version of trees, that we could get the same kind of information for the oceans.
And why is it important for us to know about the marine climate? Is that a separate entity to the land climate, or is it simply because it covers the majority of the surface of the planet we live on?
It's intimately integrated into what goes on in the atmosphere. Mm. Heat is exchanged between the atmosphere and the oceans. Carbon is exchanged between the atmosphere and the oceans. And the oceans act as a big sink, both for heat and for carbon. And really, we want to know what the history of this is in terms of natural drivers and forcings in the past, to compare it with what's going on now, see how long the oceans can continue to be a sink for these things. Because, of course, if they stop being a sink, then climate change is liable to increase or will become much more rapid in the future.
What is it particularly about clams, then, that makes them a useful indicator?
Two things specifically. If I can show you one of these shells.
Sure, because you have a bucket.
I have a bucket of shells here.
Clams.
A bucket of shells. It's a sizable shell. It fits snugly into the palm of my hand. It's kind of elliptical in shape. But what you'll particularly notice if you look at the back is that it's got prominent bands, banding here. Hmm. And these are annual bands. And we know from that that it's, the first of all, that we can date each band. So we know precisely what date the shell material we are testing was laid down. Mm. And we can also see, because it's a big shell and these get very close together, that it's possibly quite long-lived.
Mm. Okay? So rather like the growth rings on trees.
That's right, yes.
We'll be talking about dendrochronology a little later in the programme. But is it almost exactly the same? I mean, you know, the way that those bands are laid down?
The bands are laid down in a different way.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a seasonal effect whereby you get a dark band when growth kind of stops during the winter, and then a wider, lighter band when growth is continuing, and that way it's just like a tree. But essentially, the clam eats food and lays down these bands in proportion, in terms of the width of the band, to how much food it's taken in. But the nice thing is that we can date the bands, and because they're all growing in the same environment, they all grow in the same way.
Right.
So you can compare, say, a clam you've caught live and that you know the actual dates of with one that was dead, okay, with a shell that was dead. And therefore, you can push the what we call the chronology back in time. And for these particular shells we're talking about off Iceland, we go back 1,300 years now.
So this palm-sized clam that you've got in front of you, how old would that clam be?
Well,
broadly or roughly?
This one, which is probably about as big as they get in this area around the UK, maybe is about 200, 250 years.
Hmm.
But it's not just a matter of size. If you go off Iceland, where much older ones live, they're not quite as big as this.
Mm.
And that's because they live in much colder water, and therefore the metabolism is rather slower. Those can grow up to 500 years.
Mm.
And so those are the ones we use for making these nice long chronologies. And to say clam would be a bit too general. It's a particular species, which we call Arctic or Icelandic or the ocean quahog, which lives these very long periods.
But what kind of things do you see, do you analyse within the clam that give you an indication as to what the climate was like when those bands were laid down?
Yeah. So the width of the band is really mainly related to food, and there is some relationship to seawater temperature in that, but it's probably related to the link between temperature and plankton supply.
Right.
But given that we can get the actual date of each of these bands, we can look at the geochemistry of the shell, and we can find out stuff about the climate about the temperature that way.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and how do you analyse the geochemistry of the shell? What are you looking for within its chemical constituents?
Well, we're looking for particular versions of the elements in the shell. So the shell is made of calcium carbonate, which is calcium, carbon and oxygen. And in particular, carbon and oxygen come in different weights, which you call isotopes. And one particular isotope of oxygen, oxygen 18, which is very rare compared with the usual isotope of oxygen, varies in its ratio with that usual isotope, and that variation corresponds directly to temperature.
And people, I think, will be familiar with the term carbon dating, but carbon dating isn't a tool that you can use as a within marine biology, is it?
Obviously, when you carbon date something in the terrestrial environment, say the shell of a snail, for example, you can assume that the carbon in the shell, the radiocarbon in the shell, started decaying when that shell was formed. Okay, it's very different in the water, because essentially radiocarbon starts decaying when it's formed in the atmosphere. It then gets carried over or taken into the marine environment. It exists in the marine environment for what may be hundreds of years before it's actually taken up into the shell of a clam like this.
Mm.
Okay? So when you radiocarbon date a clam like this, you get a date which is apparently much older than it really is.
Mm.
And that makes it very difficult to use radiocarbon in the marine environment. But of course, we now know the exact dates of these clams using the techniques I've described of counting bands. So we can get out of this contradiction, really, by working out the actual date of the clam, then radiocarbon dating it.
Hmm.
Then we can find out how long the radiocarbon has been in the water before it was taken up in the clam. And what that tells us is what we call the age of the water mass.
Hmm.
It tells us how long it's been since that water was last in contact with the atmosphere. And when we're studying the marine environment of the past, that's very important, because it essentially tells us what water currents, water masses have been doing in the past, and how they might have changed over time.
It sounds like a phenomenally complex picture that you're building up. Does it feel complex, like you're peering at a puzzle, or once you've got the constituent parts and you put them together, is it relatively straightforward?
I don't think it will ever be completely straightforward, but it's like having a massive jigsaw.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're looking at a tiny corner at the moment, but we know that the parts are going to be there. If you think of the world's oceans and the complexity of that, working out what has been happening in detail is going to be very difficult. But I suppose it's a question, when we're talking about marine climate, of working out to a sufficiently fine level of detail so that we can tell what has been driving the climate in the past.
Mm. But when you've got such a complex picture that you have to build up, is it very, very useful, in fact fundamental, to have a relatively simple creature like this clam is almost the base part, the foundation for the information, because it seems to behave in a predictable way, and it seems to have done that for thousands of years, helpful, isn't it?
This is incredibly useful, particularly using these oxygen isotopes, which we know have a direct relationship to seawater temperature. Mm. There we've got something which is relatively straightforward. I think possibly even more straightforward than tree rings in terms of giving you a temperature for the atmosphere.
Yeah. What kind of picture, what's the longevity, the range of the picture that you're trying to draw with this kind of research, Paul?
What we've managed to do so far is for the shells of Iceland is to go back 1,300 years.
Mm.
And that's the kind of timeline that's important at the moment in terms of climate science. Mm. It includes a couple of big climate transitions, like the transition between the medieval warm period and the Little Ice Age. And that's the kind of transition that we really want to look at.
I mean, how far back was that?
The transition from the medieval warm period to the Little Ice Age occurred around the period 1300 to 1400. And yes, we have managed to find out some things about it. As I've said earlier, we talk about the age of water masses. Now, the specific place at which we found these clams, the North Icelandic Shelf, and it's near something called the Polar Front, which is where Arctic water from the Arctic Ocean meets water from the Atlantic Ocean.
Mm.
And we did this specifically so we could find out the history of what had happened at the Polar Front. And of course, it's much more complex than just saying, oh, there's Arctic water to the west of the Polar Front and Atlantic water to the east, because it does mix. But in fact, there are central parts of these bodies of water where you get mostly that particular water,
right?
Then you'll get various degrees of mixing. Mm. So we can certainly talk about Atlantic or Arctic water being more or less dominant in that area. And because we can work out the radiocarbon age of the water in that area, we can now tell how dominant or not dominant those various water masses have been.
Okay.
And that's the basis of this new research which we carried out using this chronology.
Thank you very much for showing us the clam specimens.
Okay.
Giving us an introduction to this. We're going to go and find out a bit more. And I think we'll come and bother you again
a little later.
Science Cafe on BBC Radio Wales.